Call a meeting of the Higher Education and Career Readiness Policy and Finance Committee to order. And we have some work to do, so we'll get right to it this afternoon. Thank you for being a little patient. First of all, I'd like to bring House File 3638 as amended before the committee today. I move that House File 3638 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. We have several amendments, and the first amendment is the author's amendment, the A4 amendment. This amendment reinstates some stricken language on page 19, lines 9, or 6 and 7, if we have questions. So I move the A4 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Next, I want to move the A5, author's amendment A5. And this amendment requires the Office of Higher Education to annually report on the balance of the loan forgiveness accounts in the Special Revenue Fund. Questions? Hearing none, all those in favor of the A5 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment is, the A5 amendment is adopted. Next, we have the A3 amendment, and Representative Blowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the A3 amendment, and I'll ask for a roll call. Mr. Chair, the A3 amendment is a variation of the discussion we had in Ways and Means last Thursday night, and this would take the appropriation of $5 million and divide it evenly between the University of Minnesota and the Minn State system, and it would be applied toward keeping tuition down. I'm not going to burden members too much with the entire discussion we had, but we do know that Minnesota is in the top 10 in the amount of debt that students carry and in the number of students that carry that debt. We know that student debt now across the nation exceeds credit card debt. This amendment, while I don't think it goes far enough, at least would put the $5 million where I think it should be put, and that is taking the burden of debt, which these students would carry for a decade or more, off. And so I move the amendment, and I ask for a roll call vote.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Members, questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would oppose the A3 amendment. While I certainly agree with Representative Pawlowski on the cost of education, I think that the language that is being stricken actually is undeserving, given the fact that we're giving opportunity to students to move into an emerging industry and career path that holds great promise and has already proven itself to provide a very lucrative and attractive job market, which is going wanting for participants right now, as well as, from a statewide perspective, offers us an opportunity to be a nation leading in the area of cybersecurity. I would urge a no vote on the A3 amendment.
Representative Blowski.
Now, Mr. Chair, Representative Albright and I don't disagree on the basis. In fact, I think you and I share a number of similar beliefs, particularly with skills and how we should develop them. But, Mr. Chair, this has been a problem that has been festering now for a decade. It isn't going away. This debt is the next big fiscal issue before the nation. And I would hope, while this amendment is a very small attempt to curb that student debt, and I would hope and I would encourage members to vote for it.
Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Chair. This morning, over at the Capitol, there was a leadership breakfast on cybersecurity. We had Secretary of State Steve Simon there. Margaret Kelleher was there, as well as a couple of additional members of a panel. And they spoke on the whole issue of cybersecurity. It was very impressive to hear each of them speak on the urgency that we all need, not only for cybersecurity, let's say, with our state systems, but also in private industry. When we think about the protection of each of our individual information, credit cards, Social Security, everything. And when that is breached, it's a significant devastating impact for an individual and certainly for a business or even for the consumers or customers of that particular business. The reason why I bring this up is I just want to go on record as I fully support what Representative Albright has pushed forward to put an investment of $5 million towards this particular subject. I think it's an emerging field for which we greatly need additional employees in this particular market, and I think it is an opportunity for us to put Minnesota forward in an emerging technology area. And when we have these type of opportunities, it's an opportunity not only for the students that enter that particular field, but I would say it's also a huge investment in all of us and in our private industry and also in public government just for the protection of all of this data. So while I applaud Representative Pulaski and thinking about student debt, I think the higher opportunity is really the investment that we are proposing making, and I would vote against the amendment. Thank you.
Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, and of course, this entire argument revolves around the fact that if we had a target that was worthy of this committee, we could probably easily do both. And unfortunately, we only have $5 million. So I think the choice has to be made, and the roll call will decide it for the committee, and I think in the long run we'll see which of the two issues is really the most important to this state and nation.
Any other questions? Representative Omar.
Thank you. I just want to say this gives us an opportunity to prioritize both, and I hope the committee recognizes that, and I hope we vote in favor of this amendment.
Any other? Representative Healy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, Representative Pulaski, that student debt is a big issue. And just to point out, we are putting some funding in this bill towards student debt counseling. It doesn't directly address tuition costs, but I think it recognizes the concern we all share around that and how we want to help folks make sure that they get back on track and can pay their student debt, and that is a component of the bill. I do think there's opportunities when, as a state, we need to lead and identify key industries that will take us long into the future. And what I, additionally, what hasn't been said and I like about Representative Albright's proposal is that that program will be self-sustaining. So we're putting in what I consider like seed capital. And after that, it will be self-sustaining. I think we will reap benefits as a state for a long term. Thank you.
I think we'd all agree that if this target had been bigger, we'd be voting probably entirely different. I'm talking to you. Well, anyway, at this point, here are no other questions or comments. We'll call for the vote.
Chair Nornes?
No.
Representative Christensen?
No.
Representative Pulaski?
Yes.
Representative Albright?
No.
Representative Anselmo? Representative Bernardi? Representative Daniels?
No.
Representative Haley?
No.
Representative Heinzman?
No.
Representative Jessup?
No.
Representative Lean?
Aye.
Representative Omar?
Yes.
Representative Pryor?
Yes.
Representative Schultz?
Yes.
Representative Whalen?
No.
Representative Zerwas?
No.
The vote total, 9 yes and 5 no. The amendment is not adopted.
9 yes and 5 no. It passes.
It's labeled wrong. Yeah, it is. Thanks for catching that. So it's yes, no, 5 yes. Yeah. Is that clear? Clear as mud? Okay, the amendment did not pass. We have one more amendment to deal with, and that is the A6 amendment. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment, I believe, is a friendly amendment. It defines that the chair of the Region Selection Commission comes from the appointed members, the 8 members, and then it also just clarifies language that's currently in state statute that whenever possible we'll make sure that we have a diverse pool of candidates.
Mm-hmm. Questions? Comments? Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Schultz. Representative Schultz, I'm curious because I was reading through your amendment and then the language that was going to in online 6.4 through 6.7, we already have essentially, or not 6.11 through 6.13, we already have basically the same language when it talks about the selection criteria required for region selection. So I'm wondering what, in your mind, this does, because it just seems kind of redundant to me.
Representative Schultz.
Let's see. This would go into page 6, line 19, for the recommendations, not just the selection criteria. So the pool of candidates that we recommend to ensure diversity.
Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz. Okay, so if it, instead of just going into the selection criteria, so it says whenever possible, and that implies to me that if there, I'm trying to think this through, if there was so far an at-large position and if there were 3 candidates and 2 of them were from the 8th Congressional District and one of them was from the Twin Cities, and the 2 from the 8th Congressional District were far and away more qualified to be regents than the one from the Twin Cities, you would not be able to, and that was in, 3 isn't a good number, but if you were bumping up against the limit, even if they were far and away more qualified, because they were both in the 8th District, and the far less qualified candidate was from the Twin Cities, they would not be able to be forwarded by the commission because it was possible to represent diversity. And just kind of how do you quantify those things?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's whenever possible. We want to make sure we have diverse pool of candidates, and this just emphasizes that in the other section of the law. And I'm hoping that all of the candidates would be equally qualified of those recommended, that they would all be qualified to serve on the board.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I understand that intention, and I think that intention is good, and I think it's I just think we need to have some flexibility for an example like what I talked about. And I think we already have pretty clearly in language that that's something that we desire in the 6.11 through 6.13. I'm concerned that if the commission were to forward candidates all from the 8th Congressional District, or because they were just far and away more qualified than somebody from maybe the Twin Cities metro area, that, you know, they could potentially, the process could be in legal jeopardy and, you know, potentially susceptible to lawsuits, because it does say whenever possible. So if even if someone was far less qualified, it would still be possible to represent diversity and geography, even though it wouldn't necessarily be the advisable course of action.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you're concerned about that, then maybe we should remove the other language as well. But this is whenever possible, and it's not just geographic diversity. There's other levels of diversity that could be considered. And I was told, I think the chair thought this was a friendly amendment. So if you're not in favor of it, just vote no.
Representative Christensen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I think the idea here is a good idea. I'm supportive of the diversity in geography, gender, race, occupation, et cetera. I just am concerned about saying whenever possible and putting it in the recommendations that you're potentially putting in a situation where the commission would be required to ensure geographic diversity or a different kind of diversity, that you would be requiring the commission to potentially forward a candidate that was less qualified as opposed to another candidate that was more qualified. I think this kind of diversity is important. I think we have it in the selection criteria, but I understand that you disagree. I'll be voting no. I think it's redundant and concerning.
Representative Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Christensen. I agree, share a little of your concern. And Representative Schultz, I also agree that it's a good intent. I think for me the difference between the language in current law and this law is that in current law, it's the selection one criterion must include diversity among other many criterion. But this says to me that diversity would trump all of the others because it says, when, like Representative Christensen was saying, whenever possible, which I think is just too vague for me to feel comfortable because of the example Representative Christian provided. But you could think of other examples as well where whether it's gender, geography, race, occupation, et cetera, would say this candidate has this specific diverse thing, even though you might have, 10 other candidates that are technically more qualified for other various reasons. I would just echo Representative Christensen's thought that that wouldn't be our an advisable course of action we want. We do want to promote diversity, and I think that's clear in current law. And so I'll also be voting no, but I appreciate the intent of the amendment.
Any questions, comments? Representative Schultz?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if we're following the criteria, then we will. This addition should hold if we're following it in the above criteria. Section 611, and I was told by your House research staff, maybe they could chime in, that this reference is another section that's already in current law. So if you're not happy with this, we might want to change that. But I'm open to offering an amendment where we delete lines 1.5 through 1.7 and vote on lines 1.3 and 1.4.
Are you making that an official amendment?
I'd like
amendment
to hear from House.
Mr. Hopkins.
Mr. Chair and members, so the diversity categories here are just borrowed from the existing language in statute, which is there on page 6, line 11, when it refers to the selection criteria.
Representative Heitzman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that might go to the point that Representative Christensen was making, that it's redundant. Why are we doing it? It's already there.
Representative Schultz.
Okay, I make a motion to remove lines 1.5, 1.7, and vote on, with the roll call vote of line 1.3, 1.4.
Do we need to vote on your amendment to the amendment?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that's done. So that leaves us with the first part. Any further comments on the first part of the A6 amendment? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the remaining A6 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Oh, you recognize? I'm sorry.
I don't need a roll call.
You don't need a roll call now. Okay, all right. I thought we'd get a chance to do it right once. So I'm good. Okay, all those in favor then of the A6 amendment as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, the A6 amendment as amended is done. It passed. Thank you, members. We have...
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I've got a question about the A2 amendment from yesterday, just a clarifying Question?
Yes.
On the A2 amendment yesterday, the section on page 1, section 2, dealing with the U of M sexual harassment reporting requirement, and then if we go to page 5, section 10, Mr. Chair, there was a fiscal note with that, and I can't find how it's being funded. So can you tell me how that's being funded in the bill? Or I think I may know the answer, but I just want you to say it.
We'll find an answer for you.
Okay.
Mr. Savory?
Mr. Chair and members, Representative Pawlowski, in looking at the amendment and the corresponding bill before the committee, I can't find any appropriation for, say, sexual harassment or reporting of the new requirements required in the A2 amendment.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to continue to ask a staff to answer this. If there is no funding for it, then it's assumed that the University of Minnesota would absorb the cost.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, that's correct. With the exception, the interesting part of the University of Minnesota is that there would be, it would have to come from the O&M appropriation. It probably would not come from any of these special appropriations, but the O&M would probably be the most likely place it would come from.
All right, Mr. Chair. It was just a concern, Mr. Chair, because I couldn't find how it was funded.
All right. All right. At this point, we'd like to have some testimony. So we'll begin the testimony right now from Penn State. Vice Chancellor Laura King. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good afternoon. My name is Laura King, and I'm the Vice Chancellor for Finance and Facilities for the Minnesota State Colleges and University System. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for your time today. Minnesota State certainly appreciates your time spent listening to our supplemental budget request and our capital budget request, and we're grateful for the time that you've provided us to speak with you. Your committee staff have been terrific to work with, and we appreciate that as well. In the coming weeks, we will continue to reach out to you and your colleagues to talk about our proposals before you this session and the needs our colleges and universities have for both the supplemental funding request and the technology request that I think we had a terrific conversation about in this committee several weeks ago now. As you recall, our board has a request that totals $31 million this session, and it includes money for all the campuses under the rubric of campus support, and it includes resources for us to continue on our technology replacement project, which we've talked about. Our entire request is focused on helping our campuses deliver the programs that are needed all across the state by our communities, our workforce, our business and industry partners, and with your help, they continue to work at that. We're grateful to Governor Dayton for his strong supplemental budget recommendation, and we really want to acknowledge that support here today. Frankly, we believe that our request to you this session was modest, and particularly in light of the fact that tuition has been frozen now for this current year and next year. As I've mentioned in prior testimony as well, the way the bills have been built the last several biennia, with the tails being flat, or in fact in this biennium slightly down from the first year to the second year, is really added pressure to our campuses. Our campuses have real financial needs, and the needs for upgraded technology throughout the system is not going to go away. We really hope that you can be a partner in solving that problem with us. I'm sure you will not be surprised that we have concerns about the bill that's before you today. We're troubled both by the amount of the target as well as the way in which it's being directed. If that $5 million that is available to you in the bill were provided as campus support, it would help every campus in the system across the state. Much needed help. We certainly appreciate the work and interest that's been shown in the cybersecurity program at Metropolitan State University, as well as the cybersecurity and information technology and forensic technology and IT auditing work that we have at our colleges and universities. I hadn't looked at this when I was when we went into this session, so I looked it up and discovered that we have IT programs at every single one of our campuses. All of the colleges have programs and all of the state universities. And the campus support request would help us support those programs across the state. The $10 million in campus support that we request would make a real difference in our critical programs, and it's really why we need continued help to support access as well as the programs that are on the bubble as campuses struggle to balance their budgets. The request that we brought you this session, of course, is supported by our board as well as all of our presidents. And while we certainly respect the legislative process and have been a participant in it for years and know that it's difficult work for you to do, we really think we have an obligation to communicate with you the concerns we have as bills are coming together. We know that supporting certain programs over others or bonding projects that haven't gone through the review process really sends a message that, in our opinion, isn't in the best interest of you or your members, because it unleashes a process that it complicates things greatly. We serve 375,000 people across the state. Our presidents are making tough choices every day to serve their communities and balance their budgets, and we really would ask for your endorsement of the campus support request, which would help all of these colleges and universities. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your time.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. On a similar good news note here, there were a couple of new presidents appointed.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Very exciting day for us. We just concluded our board cycle for April, and we have a new president at Ridgewater College, a new interim president at Inver, Inver Hills Community College, Dakota County Technical College, and a new we got one other.
M-State.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. How in the world could I not remember that? I'm sorry. My head was out of the board meeting, and I was over here, and I had trouble coming back.
I apologize for putting you on the spot, but I knew the answer to one of those.
I know you did. My apologies. A terrific, terrific cycle for the board. Really three terrific new presidents.
Yeah. So that's the good news for the day.
It was a great day. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, again, thank you for being here. Any questions from members? Representative Pulaski.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, you spoke in generalities. Can you explain the impact that if this supplemental would become law, the consequences of it in some specificity?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pulaski, we know, let me try this. We know coming into fiscal 19 that our colleges and universities were facing about a $34 million structural problem in fiscal 19 because of the way the state appropriation was provided this biennium. That represents maybe 4% of an average college or university budget, and we know that presidents are issuing layoff notices and program closure notices right now in order to start fiscal 19 with balanced budgets. I will have specific information about just exactly how many people are impacted in May when campus budget reports are submitted. But we do know that that work is happening. Our state universities particularly have been communicating about it because their planning cycle is longer than the college planning cycle. So we saw this coming a year ago when the operating budget was finished at the legislature, and the work has begun, but it has negative consequences across the state.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, you recall last session I requested from MnState a detailed breakdown of the impact of both the bill that had passed the House and then the conference committee report, and you gave me a spreadsheet of the impact of all of the campuses.
Right.
Would you be able to do that this session also based on what's happening with the supplemental bills? And I ask that because the last time you were before the committee, you were with Scott Olson from Winona State, and we discussed that in February 5th, they produced a document both on the internal community of the Winona State campus and then for the region the $6.2 million that was being cut, and subsequently I understand that's increased a little bit. So could you produce that document for us again?
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I don't know what I'll know in time to be responsive to your request, but I will go find out what I will know. Because the budget process is in flight right now on the campuses, we know what the $10 million translates into on a per-campus basis, and we could give you some insight as to how that would help the campuses. But as to exactly what budget reductions and what gaps each campus has right now today, I don't have eyes into that.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, Vice Chancellor King, I've been rather fortunate with Winona State and Southeast Technical and Community College in that both of them have given me in specificity the numbers and then how they intend to adjust their budgets to those numbers. I think if you can provide any of that information for us, it would be most helpful.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pawlowski, I will do my very best. I know that you're on a quick pace right now, and I don't want to overpromise, but I will do what I can to get you information that presidents are comfortable releasing because they're in the midst of their decision-making process.
Thank
but I will seek to find something.
Thank you, Vice Chancellor King.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brian Burnett. Trish, is that who's trailing behind you?
Trish.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Please introduce yourselves and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Brian Burnett. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you briefly this afternoon. When President Kaler came before this committee on March 29th, he stressed affordability for university students as one of our top priorities. The Board of Regents and the President have worked very hard to keep tuition costs down. We've given you data that over the president's term, average tuition on the Twin Cities campus for residents of the state of Minnesota is 1.5% per year, or below inflation. As you know, there are two levers to the cost of tuition, our ability to be thoughtful and good stewards of the funds we have, and the other is the investment made by the state and its public land-grant university. So this partnership's inextricably linked, and as you know, we had requested $10 million recurring to hold tuition flat for Minnesota undergraduates for the next year. That would save a potential increase that we're looking at in next year's budget between $200 and $250 for every one of our 31,000 Minnesota undergraduate students. We did a quick calculation, and that would benefit over 2,500 students from districts that are represented here on this committee. Further, the $10 million investment would offset a $10 million decrease in state appropriations for fiscal 19 under current law. Similar to Minnesota State, there was a $10 million tail on the university's appropriation that we are seeking to address. We were also pleased that the governor put a request in for this in his budget. As you can understand, we are disappointed that the House did not include resources for tuition relief in your higher education supplemental bill. Without this investment, it puts additional pressure on our budget. Our own university expenditure reductions will continue, similar to Minnesota State. To balance next year's budget, we're looking at cuts anywhere from $12 to $15 million across the entire University of Minnesota. We respectfully request, as you consider through this process, that you consider our students and the university as you move forward in budget negotiations with the Senate and the governor in the weeks ahead. And I thank you again for your support of the University of Minnesota and all that we do for the state.
Thank you, Mr. Burnett. And Trish Palermo, is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Trish Palermo, and I'm a senior at the University of Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you this afternoon on behalf of students across all of our system campuses. When university students last came before this committee, we shared with you our stories about why we chose the university and what it meant to be a bulldog or a gopher, an eagle, a raptor, or a cougar. A consistent theme across our testimony was the need to keep college affordable and accessible for all. We were encouraged when the university put forward a $10 million request to the legislature to hold tuition flat for the 2018-2019 academic year, and we were excited to see the governor include this recommendation in his supplemental budget request. We recognize, however, that there are limited funds available for many priorities across the state, and that you are making difficult decisions on how to allocate these resources. Further, we understand that the budget target you were provided was not enough to meet the university's full request. However, we are hopeful that as this process moves forward and you continue negotiations with your colleagues here and in the Senate, as well as with the governor, you will make a determined effort to provide resources to the university to keep college affordable for Minnesotans from across the state. Mr. Chairman, like many of your constituents, students like myself are looking for ways to get a good education at an affordable price. And as a senior, I'm looking out for the students who will come after me to the university. As a first-generation college student, graduating this spring may have not been a reality if it wasn't for the investment made at me to keep tuition low. When tuition continues to increase, it makes higher education seem less and less of a reality for prospective students. We know that to keep college affordable requires a strong and lasting state partnership. I respectfully ask that you keep students at the forefront of your minds in the weeks ahead, and you do what you can to support the university. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Christensen, have a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question. I was doing some back of the napkin math, which you should never do in committee, but I'm going against my own advice. So you said the $10 million would have prevented a $200 to $231 tuition increase for 31,000 undergraduate students. So I was doing the back of the math, and $200 increase for 31,000 students is more like $6 million, and if it was a $231 increase, that's more like $7 million. So I'm just wondering, could you, would you be able to freeze tuition with more like $6 or $7 million?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Christensen, I may have misspoke. I said $200 to $250. I didn't say $230. And there's no question that any support the state can give us would help the regions keep the tuition increase as low as possible. But there's no question that the $10 million would, as we put forth, would be able for us to freeze all of it across all five campuses. And so the math is roughly $250 per student if we go the full 2%. So,
if any other questions? I'm just trying to remember, has there been a time when the university has had a zero increase in tuition?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, before my time, and I'm in my sophomore year serving the University of Minnesota, there were at least two tuition freezes in the last decade, and I think that many on this committee recall those. There were at least two or three in the last 5 years, and those were all efforts by the General Assembly to kind of turn around what had been some precipitous increases when there were downturns in state support following the Great Recession in 2008. So there were at least a couple of years where there were freezes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Hearing no other questions, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
We have Paul, sir. Paul, I have trouble with your name every time. I'll just call you sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You should have been Norwegian. I would have been helpful.
My name is Paul Sirkvenik. I'm the president of the Minnesota Private College Council.
It's a nice name, by the way.
A few too many K's in it, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify briefly today on behalf of Minnesota's private nonprofit colleges. With the resources you have at this time, we appreciate that you've chosen to make an investment in the state grant program in this bill to cover the projected modest shortfall in state grant program funding that exists at this time. Like many of you and many in this room, we continue to hope that by the end of this process, there might be a larger overall target for higher education, so some additional needed investments can be made in students. In a time of limited resources, the state grant program is an extremely good place to invest in because it targets tuition assistance to those students who need it most, students from low and middle income families at all colleges, public and private. With a larger target, we ask that you make state grant program funding a priority and that it be increased enough so that students see significant increases in their grants. Low and middle income students face financial gaps and bigger barriers to access and college completion than other students, and it causes them to borrow more, and it causes them to take longer to graduate or perhaps not to graduate at all. And so you get a really big bang for your buck when you invest in those students through the Minnesota State Grant Program. I do want to thank the authors of our state grant bill, Rep. Zerwas, Nornes, Pawlowski, Christensen, Albright, Omar, and Slocum. And I want to thank all of the members of the committee for taking the time so far during this session to meet with our students on the many days that they've been here to talk to you about their college experiences and who came to advocate for the state grant program. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for members? Always good to see you. Thank you. We'd like to call up next Larry Pogemiller, Commissioner of the Office of Higher Education. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, yes. Members. Thank you so much. I want to first start by thanking you and Ms. Hennen for your courtesies, as you always have shown our office. It's a pleasure to work with you and makes it very pleasant. Thank you. Obviously, let me state the obvious. The governor certainly would have hoped you would have found additional resources to fund some of the items that have already been suggested today that were in his budget. He very much appreciates you adding all the various policy provisions that have been requested by our office, and we thank you for that. With that, I've also been asked to remind you, even though it's not your decision directly, that he would like to see budget and policy items separated as the process proceeds. He sent a letter to the leadership regarding that. And I know you don't get to decide that. I just was asked to point it out. One thing I wanted to mention that as you go forward, that is an opportunity that would be unfortunate to lose, and that is the ability to transfer money from the occupational scholarship program that is not being used. That's the free college provision you did several years ago that served about 865 students, but there's excess money. The governor's suggestion is that you redirect that $1 million roughly to a program that we've been working on with Minn State. It's called Minnesota Reconnect, which is an over 25 student who's got at least 15 credits. And there are four institutions at Minn State that are in the process of potentially hiring staff to help them bring about 500 students back to finish their degrees. So we would hope you would consider that as the process develops, because it would be a good use of currently available resources. And I think we're pretty certain Minn State would use it. It matches a Lumina grant of $750,000 roughly over 3 years. And so without this transfer of money of currently available resources, Minn State will significantly have to scale back the effort for those over 25-year-old students. So we just hope you keep an eye open for that, Mr. Chairman, if an opportunity presents itself.
All right. Questions of Commissioner Pogemiller?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, Mark Grant from Minnesota State College faculty. Welcome. Good afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, thank you so much for the opportunity to speak to this. For the record, my name is Mark Grant, and I'm a communications instructor at Dakota County Technical College, and I currently serve as the chair of governmental relations for Minnesota State College faculty. We're the organization of two-year college faculty at 39 campuses across the state. Our current concerns with House File 3638 are going to sound familiar, so I'm going to keep this really brief. Minnesota State sought MSCF's input when they put together the supplemental budget request, so we believe that it reflects the funding priorities of Minnesota State College faculty. The current bill represents a departure from those priorities. There have been people who have been doing this a lot longer than I have, but to my knowledge, this is the first time the legislature has foregone partial funding, even partial funding, of the Minnesota State request in favor of funding a single program on a single campus. Aside from the fact that there's a real need on our campus for the requested $10 million in campus support, I'm concerned with the message sent statewide when we choose to direct our limited resources to one program at a metro university. Historically, when our campuses look at creating or growing programs, the college has been encouraged, oftentimes by the legislature, to work with Minnesota State to secure funding through the pursuing of grants and industry buy-ins and partnerships. This bill would be a significant shift away from that approach. We believe that at the absolute minimum, the currently available $5 million should be reallocated to the campuses statewide. This additional investment would go directly to supporting the basic needs of our students as opposed to a much more limited scope. Given the ongoing financial stress of our campus that our campuses are under, this is simply not the time to single out individual programs on limited campuses. Thank you so much for your time, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Grant. Any questions? Nope. We got one for you. Representative Jessup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grant, a separate topic, but somewhat on the order of finances. Earlier this session, we had another representative, Representative Knobloch, came forward with kind of a more of a long-term decision idea just for discussion, and that is we have the administrative home for Minnesota State in downtown St. Paul. And the question is out there for debate as if the administrative offices were to be relocated, potentially on a financial basis, to one of the campuses, would that cause friction between the staff, professors, and so forth at each of the campuses if the administrative offices were located on one particular campus?
Mr. Grant, can you...
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, I'm not entirely sure I have the scope of knowledge to be able to speak for all campuses. We currently have a system where we do have some... We have some human resources hubs at selective campuses, regional campuses across the state. Just anecdotally, I haven't heard any particular animosity about that aspect of Minn State's function being on our campuses, but I can't speak to the sentiment of campuses across or faculty across the state.
There may be some other sites. Now, for example, at M State, my college in my town, they do payroll, I know, for a number of other campus sites. I don't know how many, but so there are some programs like that already happening out in greater Minnesota. So, any other questions, Mr. Grant, I think? Now you can go.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. Next, from Minnesota State University, it's Jenna. Is it Trinetta? Welcome.
Thank you. Chair Nornes, committee members, my name is Jennifer Trinetta, and I am here today representing the Interfaculty Organization. Thank you so much for this opportunity. 20-some years ago, I sat before a legislative committee as a high school student from Stillwater, talking about the value of public education and asking for continued investment in the K-12 system. Today, I return now as a professor of sociology at Winona State University and the president of our faculty association there to talk again about public education, this time higher ed, and ask for your continued investment in the public system that will sustain Minnesota in the future. I appreciate you allowing me this time to share the faculty perspective on the bill before you. We appreciate the recognition by this committee that our programs face real challenges trying to meet the needs of the state when resources are not available to invest in the tools we need to expand high-demand programs. That is why we've been urging the legislature to fully fund the Minnesota State request before it freezes tuition. The supplemental budget proposal for Minnesota State this year simply asks you to fulfill the unfunded portion of the tuition freeze for FY19, although even the full $10 million would only serve as a Band-Aid when our campuses need a tourniquet. Chair Nornes and Representative and former Chair Pawlowski have been steadfast supporters of state public higher education and have begun to shift the curve of state investment back up. However, there is still a long way to go to return us to the historical and statutory level of state funding the two-thirds of the cost of attendance at a state college or university. We are still below 50%, which has shifted the burden to students and families and led to an unsustainable rise in student debt. In 2013, when tuition freezes were first used by the legislature, they were fully funded. The last two biennium, we have appreciated your support, but the tuition freezes were not fully funded. In 2015-2016, there was a $21 million biennial shortfall, and last year's budget has the $10 million biennial shortfall. The impacts of these shortfalls have begun to compound on our campuses. You may remember a few weeks ago when Winona State's President Scott Olson testified here about our budget reduction efforts. You're going to hear me say something you might not hear often from union leaders. I'm very grateful to our administration. We presented Scott Olson with budget priorities that emphasized maintaining student experiences, the people that make up our university, and the value of tenure. And our administration worked hard to cut $5.8 million from the budget while not laying off a single permanent person. However, that budget reduction still had a significant amount of pain. 33 full-time faculty positions were lost through attrition, either retirements or elimination of temporary positions. 33 full-time faculty positions. In fact, 75% of the positions lost at the university were in faculty, and half of the budget reduction was achieved through cutting these full-time faculty lines. Some departments were devastated by these reductions. Our economics department, which provides gateway courses to our entire College of Business, was cut almost in half. Likewise, our accounting department, which prepares students for excellent jobs in business, was cut almost in half. Our criminal justice department, cited as the best in the state by the post-certification board, faces the choice of either staffing their law enforcement track or their corrections track. Positions were lost in our College of Liberal Arts, our College of Science and Engineering, our College of Nursing and Health Sciences, our College of Business, and our College of Education. These lost positions mean fewer courses for students, longer waits to get into classes, fewer options about how and when students can take courses, and longer times to graduation. That hurts our students, and it drives up student debt. Rather than focusing $5 million supplemental appropriation on the creation of one new program at one university, help us make these departments whole. A supplemental appropriation distributed across the MinState campuses would provide enough funding at Winona State to make one or more of these departments whole so that we can prepare tomorrow's police officers, accountants, nurses, teachers, and entrepreneurs. My colleagues from our other six represented respective state universities have dealt with even more dramatic impacts than Winona State. Currently, each of your state universities is facing similar and extraordinary challenges. We urge the committee to invest in our campuses for the same reason you're compelled to invest in this one program. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Comments, questions from members? I don't think I've been on your campus. I've been at many campuses around the state. I've been to Winona, beautiful city.
Beautiful city.
So your location, that's going to be worth something. As long as the Mississippi doesn't flood.
Hopefully.
Yeah. So I had a brother-in-law that taught in the public school system. So. Any other comments? I guess hearing none.
Okay.
You did a good job. Thank you very much. And next, Faisal Riani. Am I close on that? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for pronouncing my name correctly. You did a good job.
I did. Wow.
Absolutely.
I should do it again. But go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Nornes and committee members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Faisal Riani, and I'm the student, and I'm a student at Minnesota State University, Mankato. I will be graduating in May with a degree in computer information technology. I'm also the state chair of Students United, an organization that represents the students of the seven state universities. I want to thank the committee for your work on in this session on the higher education issues, especially the affordable textbook plan and report and support for the state grant program. And I want to express our concern with the committee's proposal to dedicate $5 million to the cybersecurity program, cybersecurity training program at Metropolitan State University. While we appreciate the support for Metro State University, we believe that funding should be used for campus support system-wide. State university students from across the state came to the Capitol on March 28th to meet with their lawmakers, many of who are before me today, to urge you to support the Minnesota State's request for $10 million for campus support. I urge you to reconsider how these funds are allocated. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you for making the trip to St. Paul. Any questions? Did a good job again. Thank you very much. Any other testifiers that want to? Anyone? This could be our last committee meeting of this session. However, it's possible we might have an informational meeting at some later date. We do have to deal with the regents. Don't forget about that either. Representative Schultz. Hi,
Mr. Chair, yes, I was going to ask about the process for regent selection. I know we haven't really talked about that. I know application deadline was Monday. And so can you give us an update on the process?
Well, Monday was the deadline for those that want to.
Applications.
You know, yeah, mm-hmm. The applications were due then. And I believe we have five names. And now we're just checking with the Senate to arrive at some dates. And we're still operating under the current process. I'm not sure what that means as far as the advisory committee and their involvement in this, since there are only five applicants. We need to work through this. Mm-hmm. So, Representative Schultz.
Sure. So I believe RCAC has not yet met about this.
That's
are we going to be bringing the applications to the joint committee, or is RCAC going to be reviewing applications and making recommendations?
I don't think RCAC maybe will be involved.
Okay.
Again, since it's just the five, I think. But it's fluid, like everything. It'll be accomplished, I believe. So, as I was saying, we may have an informational meeting at some other date too. Just don't go home yet. Okay. Okay. At this time, I would like to renew my motion for. That's what I'm making. I'd like to make a motion to authorize the reviser in the nonpartisan House Research and Fiscal staff to make any technical corrections that are necessary in the bill before it is engrossed. Those in favor of this motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Then I renew my motion that to re-refer House File 3638 as amended to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is approved. Okay. Thank you, members. With that, and unless somebody has something else, we are adjourned.